I promise you, the president has a big stick.
Hi, I'm Nick Gillespie with Reason TV, and today we're talking with the veteran newsman Jules Whitcover. He's the author most recently of The American Vice Presidency, From Irrelevance to Power. Jules Whitcover, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you.
How did the vice presidency go from being irrelevant or a joke to being very powerful and still kind of a joke, but much more important?
Well, it was a very slow process because for most presidents, they didn't either know their vice presidents or care much about them or disagree with them. And they didn't feel that they needed them. They didn't give them anything to do. I think the wake-up came in 1945 when Truman replaced FDR without being told about the atomic bomb. And so I think after that, presidents realized that they had at least keep their vice presidents informed what was going on. But it was another 30 years after that before a president really brought a vice president in as a governing partner. That was Jimmy Carter with Walter Mondale. And the reason one of the reasons he did it was the previous Democratic nominee, George McGovern, had a disastrous choice of his vice president, who turned out to be unsuitable according to public opinion.
And that was Thomas.
That was
Eagleton,
Thomas Eagleton, because he had electric shock treatments.
So Carter remembered
that and decided he was going to thoroughly vet his prospects for vice president.
And obviously that worked, at least in '76, because the Carter and Mondale ticket won. Was that considered a good experiment, though, because, you know, they did not get reelected?
Well, it was considered a very good experiment because of what was done. Mm-hmm. It was called the Mondale model, because Mondale, before going down to be interviewed by Carter, sent him a long memorandum in which he listed the things that he thought Carter needed as a vice president and things that Mondale could provide. So pretty much after that, with some exceptions, every presidential nominee, or most presidential nominees, have followed that model of vetting the person they wanted in terms of whether they could perform useful services as a vice president.
So then how does that explain, 3 terms later, you have the bizarre and disastrous pick of Dan Quayle?
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
I can't explain it, particularly because you remember that the senior George Bush became vice president, and a month or 2 months later, he almost became president himself because Ronald Reagan was almost assassinated. So one would have thought that would have been foremost in his mind, but for a reason it wasn't. I've been told that one of the reasons he picked Quayle was that his advisor at the time, Roger Ailes, a TV advisor, said, make your own choice because you're too much been considered a lapdog to Ronald Reagan. Be your own man. So he became his own man.
And became a one-term president, obviously. But then Clinton and his pick of Al Gore, talk a little bit about that, because that also seemed to be a real shift where you had two, and I guess it goes back to kind of Carter and Mandel, two people who are kind of the same age, of the same generation, and they presented a real united front.
But it really was a shift in the sense that they both came from the South, mm-hmm. It turned out to be an excellent partnership for the campaign, because Gore kind of came out of his shell, turned out to be very humorous, believe it or not, from his reputation. But when the two of them traveled together, which I accompanied them on the campaign, they were hilarious. And they actually bonded, and it got to be a real partnership. One of the differences, though, from the Mondale model was that Gore was given specific areas of responsibility, things that he was interested in, like the environment.
Right. And science policy, things like that.
Yep.
But then that relationship soured in the wake of the Clinton scandals in the second term, and Clinton was either not capable or wasn't able to or wasn't asked to campaign very strongly.
He wasn't asked to campaign very much. Gore tried to put the difference between Clinton himself, and think maybe that's the reason he lost, because he couldn't even campaign on the strong suits of the Clinton administration because personal relationship had soured.
So, well, you know, we talk a lot about the negative side, or most of us, about the negative side of the imperial presidency. Is there a kind of imperial vice presidency as well? Certainly, that's the way that a lot of people talked about Dick Cheney under George Bush, that Cheney was Bush's brain. He was running the show. He's Darth Vader. Do you buy that?
Well, I do think it was overdone. It was interesting from the beginning that Cheney was asked by the presidential nominee to pick his vice president.
Right, he was in charge of the search committee.
He essentially picked himself.
Yeah.
One of the people in the Bush campaign said to me when I asked him about it, he said that Cheney had walked through an open door.
The other probably the most controversial vice presidential nominee of the past couple of times is Sarah Palin. Was that done kind of in desperation?
Absolutely.
Just we're behind in the polls. We got to do something.
McCain had only met her once, fleetingly. Didn't know much about her. It was a Hail Mary pass. Yeah.
And you can actually see Russia from land here in Alaska.
And although she turned out to be a very charismatic candidate, and a lot of people liked her, she certainly didn't do him any good.
Well, then, who is your favorite vice president? There's been 47 vice presidents. Who's your favorite?
Well, I like Mondale personally, and I like the way he functioned in the vice presidency.
Who is the worst vice president in history, according to your lights?
Well, I think Agnew qualifies on a legal basis and an illegal basis. And it was interesting that Agnew was picked by Nixon because he was strong on law and order. But when he got in the office, he wanted to be part of the administration. And the Nixon insiders, Ehrlichman and Haldeman, just completely shut him out. Ehrlichman once said that You couldn't program Agnew to leave a burning building.
So they just had a low estimation of his abilities or his smarts, or was it something?
No,
more
both. That's what it was. And plus, they didn't want him to be in the line of succession to the presidency. And in fact, once before the second term, they thought about dumping Agnew. And one of the things that Nixon proposed, believe it or not, was putting him on the Supreme Court.
Well, that would have helped his legal problems. Right? So, well, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much. We've been talking with Jules Whitcover. He's the author, most recently, of The American Vice Presidency, From Irrelevance to Power. Thank you, Jules Whitcover.
Thank you very much.
For Reason TV, I'm Nick Gillespie.